Welcome to the keynote stage. So my name is Mark Walsh. I'm the founder of this conference and part of the leadership team with Daniela and Manel. We have got quite a feast, quite a treat in store for you. The main stage doesn't have all the top names on. Some of them are spread out for various logistical reasons, but there are some awesome presenters on this stage. This stage is also sponsored by Alain Stefani. When we first had the idea of getting sponsors, I basically said, I won't take anyone as a sponsor unless I love what they do, because otherwise it doesn't have any integrity for me. I didn't know who Alain Stefani was, but I met her in Berlin. Someone said, oh, she's an intimacy teacher, she's an ex-sex worker, best-selling author in Germany. And I said, okay, well, I'll meet her. And I met her. And as soon as I met her, I felt at ease. I felt like, wow, this is a person who's playful, but also a deep listener. This is a woman who's a real leader. Since I've seen her work with people in very, you know, around trauma, around intimacy, around very difficult areas, men and women, I've come to regard her as a friend, actually. I love her. So go to her website and check it out. It's Alain, I-L-A-N, Stefani, S-T-E-P-H-A-N for November, I. AlainStefani.com. There's an offer there called Love and Rage, which is as juicy as it sounds. You'll also find links in the descriptions for the videos below.
Hey, welcome to the Embodiment Conference keynote stage. So I am very happy to have back Charles Eisenstein. So Charles, I've interviewed for my podcast a couple of times, and he was also one of the keynotes at our first conference in 2018. Charles is a speaker, author. It's really hard to define him in a way. He's a bit of a philosopher, a bit of an activist. Covers a wide range of topics, everything from sort of human civilization to money. I did a course on his on food. There's one for men. It's really a wide range of topics. And, you know, I think what holds it together for me is disconnection, the idea of connection and disconnection, which, of course, has an embodied component. So, Charles, welcome back, sir.
Yeah, happy to be back, Mark.
How are you doing, first of all? How's things?
Well, that is a complicated question. I've been, all is healthy and all that, but feeling in my own body the what's happening to the Earth's body and the body politic, which is maybe just a fancy way of saying, like, what's happening in the world is kind of getting to me. So I'm not necessarily like happy and cheerful and activated every day, going through ups and downs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, definitely no demand to be happy and cheerful all the time here. Your beard looks a little whiter since the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
So maybe you could start there. I mean, that seems like, if it's not too painful or personal, like a wonderful place to start in terms of current times get to us. Get to me, and I'm hearing to you too. I think many people at the conference, it's like we're doing this conference in such a weird year, and it was a difficult year for many. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that actually nobody really knows what's going on, which is why there are so many, on the one hand, you could call them conspiracy theories, and on the other hand, just a lot of pretty intense intolerance and polarization and refusal to even look at somebody else's point of view. And this is, both of those are a response to a breakdown in the story that told us what's real and who we are and how the world is and how to live life. And as that story breaks down, one response is to jump to another explanation, another story about what's happening in the world. Or maybe just to hold all the more tightly to the way things were and to exclude anything that would impinge upon that. But underneath that, I don't know, but I think a lot of people, I certainly have this feeling that this isn't over yet. In fact, we're just in the beginning of a process of unraveling, which if you thought that everything was just great and the world was exactly as it should be in December 2019, then this unraveling is a terrible thing. If all along you were like, this isn't how it's supposed to be, a more beautiful world is possible, and feeling trapped in a world that is not as it is meant to be, if you've been feeling like that, then there's probably a part of you that welcomes the unraveling, even if there's no guarantee that the result of the unraveling will be anything better than what the world was in December 2019. But at least there's it's seemingly an opportunity to choose rather than being locked into the status quo. So I think I'm speaking for a lot of people when I speak of this hope, this glimmer of a possibility, even amidst the fear, the panic, the despair, because things are definitely not better now than they were a year ago. In many, many ways, there's a lot more suffering in the world than there was in December 2019. So that you know, this is kind of what my process is. You know, sometimes I'm really feeling into that and looking into the near future where things are probably going to get worse, at least on the obvious level. But then also this glimmer of new possibilities that is real enough to keep me alive. And I don't mean just alive in terms of breathing, but alive in terms of creative. Yeah.
Wonderful. And you mentioned this kind of different story. So maybe that's a foundation to start with, this the story of separation that I've heard you talk about before. Maybe that's worth recapping for those here who are new to your work.
Yeah, maybe I'll try to relate it to embodiment. It comes down to what is a human being, or what is a self? What is it to exist? What is it to be? This doesn't seem like a matter of story. Seems like just a fact. I mean, it's reality, but actually different cultures answered that question in different ways. And most cultures, maybe all cultures up until recently, understood to be, to mean to relate, to belong, to connect, as you mentioned before. Existence wasn't something you did by yourself. So this mythology of separation, that's what I call a mythology of separation, that says who you are is a separate self in a world of other, and who we are is also a separate species, separate from nature. And our destiny on the species level in that story is to rise above nature, to maybe, you know, colonize space, to have synthetic food, infinite lifespans, the end of all disease, the end of all this messiness, really the end of the life of the flesh, and maybe to upload our consciousness into computers and achieve immortality. The ambition for immortality is an aspect of the ideology of control, which is an intimate part of the story of separation. So we can see that ideology of separation and control play out in, for example, the alienation from the body, where it is believed that the most important part of a human being is the mind or the spirit. This isn't just a nerdy science attitude, it also infiltrates spirituality. I mean, even the word spirituality implies that the sacred part, the important part, is the non-material part, the non-bodily part. So we can see how much damage, I think everybody on this conference is aware of how much damage this has actually done to our bodies, and equivalently, how much damage it has done to the planet. When we understand the important part to be the non-material part and identify or locate sacredness outside of matter, then of course, we're not gonna treat matter as sacred. Instead, we're gonna treat it as resources, as commodities, as a profit potential. And that is exactly how our civilization has treated nature. Not as a sacred being deserving of reverence, or even respect. And you could explain how that is happening in the economic domain, which I wrote a book about that. But I think that to blame it simply on capitalism misses the undergirding structures of capitalism, which is, again, mythology, our basic understanding of who we are and why we're here and what is. So anyway, that's the story of separation and the program of control that follows it. I'll also mention that a little bit. The program of control says that our well-being, our progress, comes through exerting better and better control over matter. So more powerful machines, more precise control through nanotechnology, through precision engineering. And so our progress means that we'll be able to, or genetic engineering, to be able to impose control on a finer and finer level with more and more understanding, and thereby someday attain utopia, but in the meantime, improve life, one invention after another, improving life through controlling matter. And so then the same gets turned onto the body. How do you improve your health? It's again through imposing control on this sometimes wayward machine, or imposing control on the other separate selves out there that are competing with you. Because in the story of separation, more for you is less for me. And all life forms are in competition with each other. But thankfully, we have technology. We have antibiotics. We have medicine that allows us to impose control on these others so that we can be safer and safer, better and better, more and more dominant, onward and upward. That's the ideology that is, in fact, failing us today. And I'll just say, to relate this to current events, our response, like COVID-19, out of all the health crises that have been rising in my lifetime, chronic disease, autoimmunity, allergies, autism, addiction, out of all of these things, none of them fit the paradigm of control. None of them admit to a pathogen that we can dominate and achieve health. Finally, and so what has been done about these things? Not very much. We haven't radically altered society because childhood chronic conditions have risen from 1% to 52% in the last 40 years, or no, 60 years. We haven't, nobody's running around in a panic because of a very real epidemic of all of these conditions. Now COVID-19 comes along, and finally, here's a bad guy that we can fight. Here's a problem that after so long and feeling so helpless to stem the failure of the program of control and to admit that utopia hasn't come despite hundreds of years of technology. Like, this is a crisis of faith, a crisis of identity. Now COVID comes along, and finally here's something that we can control. So all of society's attention turns toward this virus. And I'm not saying that there is no such thing as COVID-19 or anything like that, but I'm saying, why are we so, as a species, as a civilization, pretty unified in combating this threat when we've done nothing about other threats that have actually harmed thousands of times more people? Why? And the answer to that lies in the word I just used, combating. This is a threat that can be combated. And so and this pattern is visible not just in public health. It's visible in politics, where there's an awful lot of, or was until recently, I don't know what's happening now, but awful lot of energy going into combating ISIS or generating new bad guys for my country to combat new adversaries, as they're called, China or Russia. But really, like, what's actually harming our society? What is the illness of our society? Is it actually that terrorists are killing thousands or millions of people? Is it that Russia has come in and taken 2 million people and locked them in concentration camps? No, the prisons are generated within our own society. Is China sending agents to infiltrate people's homes and beat people up physically and emotionally, called domestic abuse? Is that caused? No, none of these things that are affecting like a third the population, a quarter of the population, a fifth the population. I mean, one out of five women I've read are on antidepressants. Is that caused by a bad guy? No. What is causing these things? That's an uncomfortable question that doesn't have ready answers. Certainly not the ready answer of a bad guy, China, Russia, ISIS. I'll just end this rant here by saying the potential of our moment is to recognize the impotence of the tools and ways of seeing that we've used to try to dominate the world, dominate nature, dominate the body. And if we can admit that failure, then there's a possibility, miracle level healing on this earth. Because actually, none of our problems, whether they are social, ecological, or physiological, are that difficult to solve. All of the real pandemics of our time, such as autoimmunity, allergies. I mean, if you dip into the world of alternative medicine, herbs and homeopathy and energy medicine and down the line, then pretty much every disease we're told is incurable is actually curable and relatively cheaply. And I could say the same for land healing practices, regenerative agriculture, the restoration of rivers and estuaries and harbors. Like, it's not hard when we turn our attention to that and see our role in that healing as a matter of participation rather than domination. You ally yourself with the soil. You ally yourself with the ecosystem, with all of the species. You maybe bring in beavers to help restore water systems. And the same thing with the holistic approach to physical health. You don't see the body as a wayward machine. You understand that the body has a natural tendency toward wholeness. How do I support that? How do I align with that? How do I provide that extra little bit of missing information that's required for that to happen? So I just want to inject that ray of hope into dark times, that as we step into a new story, a story of interbeing, of interconnection, of wholeness, of ecology, of relationality, then so much more becomes possible.
Charles, thank you. Maybe we can underline something you said about the body earlier, just given the context of this conference. I mean, as I understand your work, if we are objectifying the body, disconnected from the body, that enables the objectification and misuse of the ecology. A sense of separation from ecology is created from our own separation and vice versa. Am I right? Understanding that correctly is sort of like the core kind of because some people ask me like, hey, why are you getting ecology people on an embodiment conference? Why have you got a whole track about that? And I'm like, because this super linked.
Yeah. It's not just like you're being politically correct and, oh, we have to nod towards climate change in order to validate our conference. No, like, these are part of the same mindset. The abuse of nature and the abuse of the body, the seeing of nature as thing and the seeing of the body as thing. These are the same mindset. And as we do to the body, so we do to nature, and other way around too. As we do to nature, so we do to the body. I wrote a book called Climate, A New Story. And I think this is where I went into this parallel that, you know, here we are pillaging nature, drawing down its vitality for not even a very good purpose. You know, it's not like the petroleum economy is producing more happiness. We're not happier for having these piles of plastic junk and exotic vacations flying around the world and, you know, closets full of clothes and, you know, hour and a half commutes and all that kind of stuff. Like that's not, and, you know, 6,000 square foot houses that have become popular. Like none of this actually makes people happy. You might, if you want to find really happy people, you know, go to a small village in Senegal, you know, or Peru or something like that, and find people who are so happy that you'll cry with recognition and grief for what is possible. So you could, if it were actually making us blissfully happy, then maybe you could say, okay, the sacrifice of nature is worth it. But we're not even benefiting ourselves through this. And I said, and I think it was in this book, maybe it was in an essay somewhere, I said, we wouldn't do that to our bodies, exhaust and deplete its precious resources for the sake of something that doesn't even make you happy. But actually we do that. I mean, we, you know, speaking generally, and even I do that, exhausting myself for something that isn't even an expression of who I want to be in this world. Pulling on my adrenals, getting exhausted, and to what end? And so this is a, you know, adrenal fatigue is actually a powerful medicine because on a deeper level, this is not, you know, the body making a mistake. It's the body saying, I refuse to support you on a path that is not your soul's path. So it's actually a kind of health. And we might even see many diseases. I won't say every disease, but most diseases as a kind of an initiation. Either it's a moment of pause from life where the process of coming inward, of withdrawing, of really looking at your life. Maybe we didn't have opportunities to do that in the crush of the busy modern lifestyle. And now you get sick, you get seriously ill, and you cannot escape the questions that have been trying to come in. Or it could be something that just keeps you honest, like adrenal fatigue, where you just don't have the energy to do things that are not aligned anymore. So ultimately, this is to see the body as an ally, as a guide, and not as an enemy of the spirit, or even as something distinct from the spirit. It's not that the body is the vehicle of spirit. It's that the body is the spirit made flesh. And so this is a reuniting of separated aspects of the self. And it mirrors, to just, you know, go back to the ecology point, it mirrors a reuniting of humans and nature and of technology and ecology. This is where we're going. This is where we want to go. This is what is possible. This is a future that we can choose.
Thank you, Charles. It was actually a moment in the run-up to the conference where the staff were all getting really depleted and we were all pushing it really hard. And I said, hang on a minute. This is, we're treating ourselves as inhuman to make an embodiment conference. This is crazy. and just kind of put the brakes on a little bit and said, take a day off to people. What do you need? Let's get some more people in. Let's help out. Let's get a dog for the office. You know, just a bunch of stuff, bunch of human stuff. It was recognition that it wouldn't make sense that an embodiment conference in an inhuman way. And I think we've been less than perfect in that front, but it's definitely on our radar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it also occurs to me that a lot of body practices that may say, hey, it's an embodied practice, still come from this point of view of control. You know, how can I make my body the perfect yoga shape or you know, the perfect whatever it is? It's still coming from this point of sort of command and control point of view.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I like to challenge my body. I like to test limits. So that's different though than fighting the body. Because actually even on a body level, like our muscles want to be used, our capacities are here to be used. And that's why you get a different kind of pain and pleasure from pushing yourself than you do from abusing yourself, say with you know, drugs or something like that.
You read this article, I think it was The Coronation, was that what it was called? And it got you in a little bit of hot water. What's the, what was the gist of that? And why was there so much pushback? I read it and thought it was very good. So I didn't really understand.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was very long. It was like a 10,000 word essay. I wrote about the civilizational tilt toward control that I've referenced here, that even with, like, you don't need an evil group of conspirators to act on a natural social tendency in the story of separation towards solving a problem by finding something to control. So I said a little bit about that here a few minutes ago too. And then I also wrote about the choice point that we're facing, which a coronation is an initiation into sovereignty, into kingship or queenship, into sovereignty. And that we are, by being shown the direction that we were headed toward, let me finish the sentence. By being shown the direction to which we were headed, we are offered the opportunity to choose whether we really want to go that way. And when I say we were already headed, even before COVID, more and more of life was moving online. People were becoming more and more distanced from each other. In-person events were less and less necessary. Education was happening online more and more. An obsession with safety and hygiene has been growing for decades. So, and not to mention the totalitarian control of information and censorship and so forth. Like, none of this is anything new. So we're being shown in an extreme form where we have been headed anyway, and therefore asked, do you really want to go there? So anyway, yeah, the pushback on the article came because our political body right now is so polarized that people read everything through the lens of, okay, which side does this help? So if I'm questioning public health policy and, oh, another thing is I was going through terrain theory. I don't know if that rings a bell, but it's the idea that in contrast to germ theory, that germs are often or usually more a symptom of a disease than a cause of a disease, that they're attracted to diseased tissue states, that they're opportunistic, that you can harbor, you know, millions of viruses, but they're only going to erupt into disease when you have a susceptibility or even a necessity to go through that disease. Anyway, I advocate a lot of alternative modalities, you know, so that gets me associated now with I don't know, for somehow like I got associated with QAnon and New World Order conspiracy theories and the pedophilia elite, you know, kind of conspiracy theories, and like this whole universe of, and I don't even like calling them conspiracy theories because that term is used to dismiss and denounce anything that deviates from orthodoxy. And I'm sorry, some things that deviate from orthodoxy are true, at least I think so. Not everything, but some of them are. So anyway, yeah, like it was really bewildering for me because I'm like, hold on, since when is questioning big pharma and the intelligence services and the government considered right? I thought that was left. I thought it was like the hippies that did alternative medicine and ate organic food and wanted to go back to the land and questioned authority. And now all of a sudden, I have always identified as a leftist. And now all of a sudden I'm getting like deplatformed from things because people imagine that I'm, a supporter of QAnon, which I'm not. I mean, I even wrote a whole essay called The Conspiracy Myth, explaining what I think about conspiracy theories. This is pretty far off the embodiment topic, but you're smiling, so maybe I'll just say a minute of it. Is that right?
Please.
Yeah. Just that even if they are not, whether or not they are factually true, objectively true, they carry a truth, as any myth does. Myths don't have to be objectively true for them to be true. Like the Hindu myth that the world rests on the back of a turtle, which is also believed by Native Americans in many, many places in North America. Like, that's true. And if you went to a Hindu or Native American and be like, I can prove that that's false, you're wrong. And I show you a picture of the globe, that they'll be like, yeah, but it's also true that the earth rests on the back of a turtle. So I asked in that essay, what is the truth that is contained in conspiracy theories? And there's a bunch of them. One of them is that indeed a power unfriendly to human interests is in control of the world. It's the identity of that power may not be a cabal of diabolical controllers. That power could be capitalism. It could be white supremacy. It could be patriarchy. It could be the story of separation. But that intuition that says there's something really wrong about here, really wrong going on here. This is not the way the world should be. We are in the hands. We are all puppets. All of our leaders are puppets of this power. That's true too. Because if you actually get to know somebody in a powerful position, or what we think is a powerful position, and you talk to them and say, well, why don't you do this? And why don't you do that? They'd be like, I can't do any of that. Because what about middle management? What about the bureaucracy? What about the opposition party? What about the international financial markets who will abandon our currency if I deviate too far from the policies that they like? I can't do anything. You're looking at the wrong guy here. That's what it's like to be a so-called leader. So again, this intuition that rides the vehicle of conspiracy theory is true. These are puppets. And anyway, I'm not going to try to go through the whole essay, but I mean, can't we be a bit more generous with each other and not dismiss and condemn and denounce other people based on some dehumanizing judgment about them, that if they disagree with me, they must be stupid and ignorant and bad.
But to people listening as well, that if you disagree with Charles, that doesn't make him stupid or ignorant, or you stupid or ignorant. Like a crazy idea that we have at this embodiment conference, we can have diversity of opinions, you know, absolutely radical idea that we don't have to hate each other. You might draw the line somewhere slightly differently than Charles in terms of what is and isn't the conspiracy. I just want to point people to the Q&A. Let's upvote the questions and, you know, see what people are most interested in. And while that's happening, I would like to wish Paul Linden a happy birthday. Paul Linden is one of the elders of our community and a great mentor to me, and this event wouldn't be happening without him. So there he is on the screen, bottom left. Let's all give Paul a wave while you're upvoting the questions. Happy birthday, Paul. Okay, so Charles, shall I read out one of the most popular questions?
Sure.
Have you healed yourself from a chronic illness, adrenal fatigue, and how did you do it?
I mean, I have dealt with adrenal fatigue for a long time, and I cannot say I've healed myself of it. It's one of those guardians, you know, that keeps me honest. I find that when I was able to do cold water plunges, it pretty much got all the way better. And I felt really healthy. But I'm not able to do that until winter comes and the pond is cold that I go to. So, I'm quite distrustful of any kind of health fundamentalism that offers the one cause for disease and the one solution for it. And various fads come and go. For example, to blame all conditions on parasites or on acidosis or on inflammation or on trauma. Like, there's these mind-body doctrines that come and go. And I think all of them offer a powerful lens on health and illness. But the nature of, like, I've known some very powerful healers who themselves became ill and were unable to heal themselves with their own modality. And that is because health is, illness is an initiation. An initiation has to bring you beyond who you already are and what you already know. That's the nature of it. So no matter how powerful a healer you are, no matter how knowledgeable you are about nutrition and about exercise, and you know all of the latest knowledge, when your soul's journey comes to a transition point, you may need that initiation of something that none of your knowledge helps you with. That's the dilemma that requires growth, requires one to first to be humble. Because you try, you're like, okay, I know how to handle this. I know what to do. And I've been telling everybody else what to do. So I must be able to do this and do it for myself and demonstrate that I have been right all along. And so the initial stage of that body-born initiation is to try as hard as you can doing the things that you thought would work and don't actually work, and then to let go of that and to step into what I call the space between stories, where you just don't know anymore. And that rather humiliating experience is the genesis of new knowledge. That's that empty space is where new knowledge can come in, and that release is what allows new growth to happen.
Thank you, Charles. There's one more question here that's very popular. Alex asks, I'm a bioethicist and I'm very interested in medicine/technology and suffering. Do you not feel that advanced medicine and technology can have its place in alleviating suffering? Can future medicine technology not be in a collaborative way designed to help with suffering rather than in a dominant way? Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think that any modality, including high-tech modalities, is useless. I think that they all have their place. And the problem today is that high-tech control-based medicine has gone beyond its proper place and usurped the place of other ways of healing and other ways of staying well. But it definitely has its use, and in its proper domain, it's miraculous. I mean, the you know, for example, saving people from severe trauma or, septic shock, you know, or like, I mean, you can be on death's door, burns over 90% of your body, et cetera, traffic accident, you know, gunshot wound. I mean, it's incredible what high-tech medicine can do. And but if you're talking about chronic diseases and the diseases of civilization, it isn't helping very much. So yeah, it's about what is the proper role of each of these modalities. And I would just like to see a lot more of our collective energy go toward researching the low-tech modalities and the ones that, and developing infrastructure for those and developing social acceptance and systemic acceptance of those. Like pretty much everything I do for my health is not covered by insurance. So, yeah.
Thanks, Charles. What keeps you going at the moment?
What keeps me going is people who love me. That's the short answer. You know, people who can hold me in sanity when I feel like I'm spinning out, when people who can remind me of the beautiful possibilities that my heart knows are true, but that I forget, you know, I get swamped. And I cannot hold that new story, that hope under my own power. On me, not so much locally actually, but globally, you know, people, my deep allies who can really remind me of who I am and why I'm here when I forget. That's what keeps me going. No special quality of my own, but my community.
This is a little bit unusual for an interview. I don't think I've ever done this before, but tell me if it's out of order. I have a bit of a sense of you being run down. I'm wondering if there's anything we can offer you here that might be nourishing. My sense is there's a lot of love for you here and a lot of appreciation for your work. And just not sure if it's something we can put your way.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm not sure what you can do over Zoom. You're right. I am a bit run down. I'm planning a 2-month kind of sabbatical retreat in the month before and after solstice. I want to make something really beautiful and get that started during that time. I'm not sure what it is. It may be something different than I've been doing for the last 10 years. But I think the reason I got run down is I was traveling a lot. Jet lag, airplanes, you know. So thanks to COVID, I no longer am doing that. And this is such a personal example of feeling trapped in not quite the right life, but couldn't get out of it, you know. There was just too much momentum. And I would say, okay, I'm going to cut down. But then, you know, some conference would reach out and it's such a beautiful conference and they're doing such good work. And Charles, please, you know, okay, I'll go to this one. And then pretty soon, you know, I'm traveling a third of the time and on airplanes and stuff. So, and then I wrote that coronation essay and everybody was asking me to be on podcasts and stuff. And I've been spending all this time on the computer. And anyway, but to answer your question, I'm not sure what you can do tangibly, but even just your prayers and moral support, And I had this psychedelic experience a few years ago where the being of the sacred plant medicine, you know, I went into it, I was like, okay, tell me, like, give me whatever experience I need to be of better service to Gaia. And if it's a tough lesson, that's okay, because I really want to help more. You know, I kind of went into it with this heroic attitude of bring it on, you know. And they say, be careful what you ask for. But what I got was the most gentle experience of being held by a grandmother. And she said, just stay here. Just be here. That's enough. That's all we want. And so, yeah, I'm like, here I am sharing this with how many strangers here? 991. Okay. It's kind of weird, but anyway. Just looking at this, you know, pattern of feeling like I have to earn my right to exist, you know, and do more and do more and do more. And I don't want to turn this into a message of passivity and tell everybody that, you know, don't do anything, but exhausting myself isn't going to help the world. And actually, overall on this planet, I think the world would be a lot better off if people did less. Not everybody, but if we all slowed down a bit, the world would be a better place. So, yeah. Thank you, Mark. That was very kind of you to ask that.
A bit unusual, but it came from the heart. And I, you know, request you take a little bit of time to look at the chat at some point. There's just a huge number of positive messages from people saying that you've influenced their lives and they care about you and they want to see you well. So probably is good for you in some way or another to read those. I was getting those myself yesterday after a session, and it was, takes a bit of courage sometimes to let it all in. A bit weird from strangers sometimes, huh? But maybe as I'm doing the wrap up at the end, take a few minutes to look at the chat.
All right, I will do that. Thank you.
Okay, we're in the sort of last 5 minutes or so here. This has just gone by. I'd forgotten I was tired. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Huge gift. Is there anything that you kind of wish I'd asked you about that I haven't, or you thought, yeah, I could say a little bit more on that?
Oh, you know, I mean, I can speak for days, but... No, I don't think I want to actually go back into that more mental space. Yeah.
Yeah. Should we take a couple of minutes of silence together before we wrap up, and in the sort of spirit of doing a bit less?
Yeah. Maybe there's something though that I could offer. Yeah, you know, just playing off this idea that I don't have to earn my right to exist. If we're going to learn from nature, you know, I don't see animals thinking that they have to earn their right to exist. They spend most of their time actually not doing very much. And when they act, they know what to do. And we're animals. And maybe despite all of the calls for frenetic action, especially in the political realm, and that this is the moment. Is that true? And where do you source the knowledge of whether that's true or not? And I would, I guess, offer what I'm practicing, which is, or what I'm trying to practice, but I'm reminding myself, as much as I'm reminding anyone else, is to let that come from the body and not the urgency that is being broadcast at us that hurries us into one or another militant camp and constant crisis mode. Because I don't want to say it's not time to act. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying to source that knowledge of whether it is time to act or not from the body and to listen. That's something I want to become better at. Otherwise, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be here. So it's, but that, even that's not the reason. That's not the reason, actually. It's not do it a different way or I'm not going to survive. It comes from a choice of how I want to live and what's beautiful to me. A choice for life. Incidentally, that's what I say in my climate book, that we're not going to change because we're threatened with extinction. We're going to change because we choose life. So, yeah. Thank you for that last opportunity.
Wow. I think this is one of the most beautiful and real and vulnerable talks I've ever seen at a conference. Really touched, Charles, really touched. Can people feel it? It's like, it feels special, huh? There's something in the air with this one. Charles took it to a new level for all of us, I think. Whew. Okay, it seems prosaic, but Steve, if you want to put Charles' website up, he's got lots of good books. Seems like a sort of prosaic end, but there's a couple more practicalities, and I'll come back for Charles for a final word, maybe. Lots of good stuff coming up at the conference. Please do check out Adrian Harris's whole ecology channel, 100 Ecology and Research, it's called, and there's so many good speakers there. If you haven't seen Bayo's talk, I recommend that one, David Abrams. And there's also all sorts of other things on tomorrow or today, I think it is technically in England. I'm doing a session on coaching tomorrow. There's Tom Myers on anatomy. There's Leslie Kaminoff from the yoga world, Peter Lovett from research. And yeah, this time tomorrow, David Abrams is on. If you like this talk, I'm pretty sure you'll like David's in terms of the spirit of it. Charles's talk is going to be kept free. So I know this is Charles's wish. So it won't be behind any paywall. It will be free ongoing forever for anyone who wants it. The other talks are available in the library. Get after a talk like this. I don't want to be like a salesperson here just to say it's there if you want it. And in terms of digesting things, it can be really helpful to not feel like there's a rush to watch everything in 10 days, you know, to digest it in your own time. The model we have is a good balance in a very imperfect world between providing stuff for free and not utterly bankrupting me. So your support is also personally appreciated, people, if you want to get that. Charles, if you have anything you need support from us, or you know, if you're next stage, we've got a pretty good network, people might be able to help you in different ways, so don't be shy to reach out. As ever, people, I'm sure, will be discussing this on the Facebook group ongoing. So, you know, reach out there, people, if you want to talk about these issues. Afterwards, we'll do our normal coffee break. So if you want to, like, if like me, you feel quite touched and a bit emotional, it's quite good to talk to other human beings rather than sort of be talked at. So those coffee breaks are there if you want to chat to a few people, and you can do that. Steve, I'm a bit choked up, Steve. Am I forgetting anything here?
I think you're pretty much on point. I've got everything down.
Thank you for hosting us. Oh, I love to Brooke for her poem at the beginning. Matt, our designer, just because he's on screen and he almost never is. Happy birthday once again to Paul, our elder. And for the final word, Charles, we're putting a book together and putting a quote from one sentence from each of the 1,000 presenters in. Would you like to give a top embodiment tip for that book?
Yes, but not right now.
Okay, you can send it to us. No rush, no rush. That's the kind of pausing and no rush is what this is all about.
Yeah. Wow, these are beautiful comments here in the chat. Thank you, for everybody. And
I hope you've had time. I'm going to leave those up. I hope you've had time to read some of those. In the spirit of having a little time and a little pause, let's end this now. If you're planning on doing something afterwards, then, you know, why not give yourself the treat of 4 minutes of doing nothing? That'll be my invitation to you guys if you've got something planned for the hour. Okay. Thank you, Charles. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.